And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. This show is for the week of July 17th, 2022. Right now, the global carbon dioxide levels are 419.08 parts per million. And there are 2,729 days left until the year 2030. The clock keeps ticking. Well, if you live in Massachusetts, you might be aware, but you might not be aware, of the crazy legislative calendar that our state maintains. And the way everything works out, typically, is that 2 years of legislative wordsmithing and talking and trying to make deals comes to some sort of grand finale in July of the second year, which is where we are. We are coming to the end of the legislative session in the State House in Boston. It is slated to end before the end of July, which is another 10 days or so. What typically happens, for better or worse, I mean, the Mass legislature is a human place. What happens, everything gets put off till the end, and all the big deals are struck in sort of a crisis mode in late July. And that seems to be where we are with climate legislation. So on this show, we've talked a lot about the various climate bills. I'll remind you that all this started with the Massachusetts House of Representatives passing a bill that was primarily focused on getting wind turbines in the water off the shore of Massachusetts, which is a good enough thing, right? That's a really trying to facilitate getting that electricity produced. At the same time, the Senate passed a bill called an Act Driving Climate Policy, which ironically enough had a lot to do with electric vehicles, right? And how we all get to have electric vehicles, right? Spandex jackets for everyone. Now what happens is that these two different pieces of legislation, one passed by the House, one passed by the Senate, have to come and be resolved in what's called a conference committee, where the Senate and House representatives talk to each other, and then boom, out of the birthday cake in late July pops a bill that then gets voted on, and there you go. Well, that can be very unsatisfying for people who are lobbying and working for specific kinds of legislation. In particular, the climate legislation has all kinds of stuff in it. And since the two bills between the Senate and the House are different, there's a lot of room for, I don't know what the right word is. We want to make sure that the right stuff happens when this bill comes out. So to that end, there are a bunch of specific topics, but we are happy to speak today with someone who has some particular insights about things that ought to be in that bill. And we are happy to talk to Sarah Ross, who is a Massachusetts resident, has been a climate leader for many years, and is now the co-founder of a new national nonprofit called Undaunted K-12. Sarah, welcome aboard. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Ted. Thank you so much for having me on today. This is a pleasure.
So I gave a little story about the background for where we are vis-a-vis climate legislation that is making its way through the State House. Did I get that story right? Or how do you see it? And what do we got to do next?
You did. Birthday cake and all, for sure. Yes. I certainly have a lot of sympathy for legislators who are stuck there in a hot July trying to make this happen. But I also have a lot of confidence that the chairs and the conference committee know how important this moment is for Massachusetts, and we'll find some resolution, as you alluded to, between two very different bills. You know, one laser focused on offshore wind, a really important piece to generate clean energy, and the Senate bill, really like a whole smattering of important elements related to transportation and buildings, two things that touch the daily lives of residents, you know, every day. And, you know, a piece in the Senate bill that I'm really excited about and excited to speak with you about is the piece that touches on schools, because we're really passionate and Undaunted K-12 about the role that schools can play in addressing our climate emergency.
So tell me about, so just to repeat back what I think I heard you say, that in the Senate bill, right, which is one half of the thing that's trying to be jammed into the round thing that's being put into the square hole, right? There is provisions to that pertain to schools. And that you're hoping that gets included in the final. Tell me about what the Senate bill says about schools and climate.
Absolutely. So the underlying legislation filed by Senator Joe Comerford and Rep. Mindy Dom, two of our champions out here in Western Mass, they filed legislation called Green and Healthy Schools legislation. And it's focused on setting standards for our schools. You know, as many parents and educators and members of our communities discovered during COVID, we don't actually have a lot of standards that govern how healthy our schools are, how sustainable or green our schools are, certainly. And the time has come for us to do that. And so the piece of legislation would establish standards around schools and then importantly, assess where our schools stack up today against those standards. So it would be things like healthy indoor air, things like temperature, perhaps, you know, a whole range of factors that we know contribute to students' abilities to be healthy and to learn while they're at school.
And so just so that I'm clear, the standards that the bill would address are things like how many air changes per hour, right? Which is very important for COVID stuff, right? Are the rooms airy enough? Is enough light? Is it too hot, too cold? Is the water in the bubbler clean, right? There's all kinds of things like that. So that, do those provisions rewind as far back as climate? Well, I mean, greenhouse gas emissions, or how does that connection make?
Yeah, they also talk about getting fossil fuels out of schools, because we know that burning fossil fuels is part of what makes our air unhealthy, outdoor air certainly, and outdoor air becomes indoor air. So these things are all connected. So yes, getting fossil fuels out of schools is part of what's contemplated in setting those standards. And so it's really, these are the first foundational ingredients we need to make a plan to get our schools off of fossil fuels and make sure they are healthy and supportive in general of our students' learning. You know, as the environment in which they exist is going to change, right? We know that it's getting hotter. Last year around this time, or you know, at the end of the last school year, 18 schools in the state had to close because they were just too hot for kids to learn, right? Yeah, yeah. So this is something that is affecting our school buildings. Our school buildings are not prepared for it. And we need to be really investing in our schools so they can continue to do the important job that we rely on them to do, right? Teaching our kids is a critical part of what makes Massachusetts a great state to live in, right? We have great schools. So
the heating systems in school, I flashed back to Holy Family Grammar School, which was a three-story brick building. And in the basement of that brick building was this horrific boiler you weren't supposed to get anywhere near, right? And so you're right. I mean, there are probably more modern schools and less modern schools. There's all kinds. There's a wide range. Maybe you can comment on that. There's probably a wide range of schools that are, and that some need more help than others. I would bet that in some of the more urban places across the state, the schools tend to be more older, I guess, right? Is that fair?
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. I mean, the reality is that our school infrastructure reflects and reverberates many of the same inequities in our broader, you know, system. So schools serving Black and Brown kids are, you know, tend to be the ones without air conditioning, right? We rely on local property taxes to support our schools in some large measure. Mm-hmm. And so that ends up kind of replaying the same economic inequities that exist in our state, right? In our
and the section of the legislation that you're interested, does it include money to change things, or does it begin with setting standards and say let's begin with square one and just find out where we are, right?
It's the latter there. Yeah, it does not address the money that we need to get there. You know, there are other opportunities to do that. We have two tools at our disposal right now today. You know, one is all the COVID relief dollars that are still sloshing around our state. So all of our schools got dollars directly from the federal government right to our schools. A good number of those schools are planning to invest in overhauling or updating their HVAC system. This is a great chance for the state to help those schools invest in a way that creates a glide path to electrification, as opposed to one that doubles down on fossil fuels and, you know, potentially creates stranded assets for those schools, right? If they buy in a fancy new high efficiency, yes, but still a gas boiler, right, you know, that's exactly at odds with, you know, our, what our Clean Heat Commission is trying to help the state do and our goals of reducing building emissions, right? So COVID relief dollars that are in the hands of schools right now, the state still has additional ARPA funds, over $2 billion that they can allocate. And that's another opportunity for us, right? So there's a proposal to seed a zero carbon renovation fund to help really jumpstart the market for retrofitting existing buildings.
So hang on, but that's a yet another piece of legislation, and there's a big logjam. So just to keep everyone on the same page, there is a Section 64, I think you mentioned, in this Senate bill that pertains to setting standards, health standards around schools. And right. I guess one of the questions I'm dying to ask is that seems like a template for lots of other stuff, like the leading edge. The first thing you say is like, let's take care of the schools, do them right according to the, you know, that will teach us how to do it in other places. So that's one bill. Then there's another bill that you just made reference to, which is a big chunk of money to talk about retrofitting existing buildings, right? Zero carbon retrofits. Can you tell me more about that one?
Yeah. So that's a proposal to provide $250 million to the Mass CEC to really jumpstart the market for retrofitting our buildings to be zero carbon and to move that. So this is really deep weatherization, much more aggressive than, you know, kind of replacing a few light bulbs, if you will. And so schools would be a great kind of showcase building type for that kind of work also, along with affordable housing. And so these are the ways in which we can make investments that not only address, you know, the climate crisis, but do it in ways that support an equitable transition to zero carbon too, right? Schools, affordable housing, these are great, great sectors to support folks that are, you know, suffering from high energy bills and going to schools in schools without air conditioning, as we discussed.
I mean, I think you've identified a very interesting kind of synergy, right? Right? There's money floating around. Kids need better schools. We all as a society or as a state, we need to learn how to get off fossil fuels. And these are all these things kind of come together and saying, let's begin studying the schools and put money behind making them greener and more healthy places, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's, I mean, in our minds, schools are just such a great showcase sector for so many climate solutions. You know, when you think about one out of every six Massachusetts residents going to a school every school day, right? When you think about how publicly the budgets of schools are debated and discussed, right? It's just such a great place to model the climate solutions and, you know, things like the budgetary savings that come from those climate solutions, right?
Because that's right. I mean, that would be like a huge boon, I think, for many school districts, right? Because they still have to pay the variable cost of these fuels as they go up and down, as Mr. Putin invades and sends the price of gas up, all of a sudden the school's paying more, right?
Absolutely.
So to be, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Absolutely.
So tell me so there are, we've mentioned at least two separate bills that as climate activists, we'd like to see come out, jump up, come out of the birthday cake by the end of July, right? Pop forth and be passed. How can people help? What can people do? Do you have a website, someplace people can go to learn more about how to take action?
We do. UndauntedK12.org is our website. We have a whole section about our work in Massachusetts that folks can go to. And there's also a whole section of our website that's really geared at district leaders, state leaders that are interested in learning more about how schools can be the epicenter of climate action that they should be. It's called our K-12 Climate Solutions Center. It has things like model policies and actions and resolutions from actually work across the country. We're a national nonprofit. And so, you know, you can go and see the great work that Salt Lake City did to their school district to come up with a climate plan that gets them to carbon neutrality in decades to come.
That's an interesting, I mean, because that is somewhat similar to the MCAN model of sharing, you know, as a learning center, right? MCAN tries to connect communities that are doing things so they learn from each other. Undaunted K-12, which is one word, no dash between the K and the 12, right?
One word, no dash. Thank you.
And yes. So you can go there and look up what people are doing in other places to try and figure out leading edge, I think, is what it's called, right? Yeah. Leading edge solutions that you too could implement in your school.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of them I'd love to highlight is actually in Arlington, Mass, where they have, they are doing work to, it's called their electrification air quality plan, where they've gone out and said, we need a plan for all of our schools to electric all of our schools to reduce our reliance on fossil fuels, eliminate it, and improve air quality. And so they're doing work to look holistically at their portfolio. That work that Arlington's doing is work that we need all of our cities and towns to be doing. And the state needs to find ways to support that.
And I think that the pressure needs to be brought to Massachusetts legislators. That is to say, if you're living in Massachusetts, your state rep and your state senator, everyone nowadays is smart enough to Google, but you can go to the, I think you type, where do I vote MA? Boom, and you find all of your legislators, and then there's a phone number and an email you can, you don't have to be an expert to say, dear Ms. Representative, I want a good climate bill, you know, I want my schools protected, and so that is an action that people can take at any moment, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And then I would be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, two other opportunities that residents should be looking for and thinking about in the coming weeks and months. Certainly, we have, you know, a race for a new governor coming up. And I certainly hope that our next governor, you know, centers schools in the work of the state in terms of our climate work. There's great opportunities there. And that new leadership, you know, can really excite the work of agencies, because we also have a Massachusetts School Building Authority, right, that plays a huge role in funding, investing in our school buildings. And we need to use that tool effectively to make sure that all of our new schools, that we're building schools that are, you know, only reliant on electricity, no fossil fuels, which, you know, that's not a regulation we have in place today, right? And there's no reason why we should be building new schools that are reliant on fossil fuels.
Right. Fascinating. Fascinating. Well, look, what we'll do is we will try to put up links on the MCAN blog to undauntedk12.org and where do I vote MA and all those things that people can get to. If you do want to go to the blog, you go to the massclimateaction.org website, and across the top, the banner, you look for newsletter and more. You pull that down, it says blog and podcast, and you click there. So after four or five clicks, you can finally get to the podcast and these links, but it's worth it. If you have any ideas about future shows that you would like us to talk about, please send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we should be talking about. You're probably listening to the show on your smartphone using Stitcher or one of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask all of your friends to listen to us on their favorite podcast distribution app. Of course, we're on Apple, we're on Google, we're everywhere. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So, Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and make this important link between schools and climate. It's great.
My pleasure.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.